From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be. In the world's 25 time zones, covered like a warm blanket by this program, Midnight in the Desert, my name is Art Bell. And I'm here to do whatever damage I can do. All right, we have simple rules for the program. Really, really, really simple. No bad language. And one call per show, maximum. That's it. I would like to welcome KUJ in Walla Walla, Washington. That's right. KUJ, hello in Walla Walla. Nice to meet you. This is a show that you're going to have to learn to love because, you know, like pickles, you might, when you first taste it, go, But after a while, you'll figure out if we're not doing what you like tonight, probably tomorrow night we will. Tonight is going to be really weird. Todd Robbins is really weird. And I say that as a weird person myself. He's really weird. Anyway, you'll find out. Let me talk about a couple of news-like things. The United States military will deploy a new special operations force to Iraq. We'll step up the fight against the Islamic State militants unleashing violence in Iraq and Syria and determined to hold territory until they have seized virtually everything across the Middle East. So we're getting more in the fight. And I saw a grilling up on Capitol Hill earlier today that was worthy of repeating, but I won't repeat it word for word. It was a military general, forget his name. And they were asking, have we made any progress in winning the war? And the general said, we will win the war. But have we moved ISIS back at all anywhere? We will win the war, is the answer. Are we winning the war? Well, we will win the war. That's kind of how it went. I'm still scared to death of what's going on in Syria. The Russians, you know, with the missiles now and their own jets and everybody's missiles, and it's a shoot down by Turkey of a Russian jet. Really serious stuff. And we got into a conversation last night about NATO. And today I got a whole bunch of, I guess, kind of disturbing emails in a way, to me anyway, my age, I guess. And everybody said, oh, don't worry, Art. World War III can't start over there. Look, if Turkey did something stupid, the U.S. would pull out of NATO before they ever did anything. Well, you'd be surprised, I think, those of you of middle age, how many of those I got. NATO's going to dissolve. You don't have to worry about NATO. NATO is a treaty organization, and basically, you know, skipping through all the legalese, it says, if you attack one of our NATO partners, as in Turkey in this case, it would be the same thing as if you dropped a nuke on New York. And everybody in NATO would respond in kind, and that has kept the beast at bay. But our younger generation, they don't know about NATO. We better get them educated about NATO. Or could they be right? You know, I thought about it. Well, yeah, maybe we would not go to war over Turkey, which means we would not keep our NATO promises, which would mean that once that happened, NATO would indeed, as they point out, dissolve, and the United States would lose a very great deal of its power and influence in the world, and the great days would surely be behind it militarily, anyway. And I don't know what it would lead to. But some of you parents out there better talk to your children about what NATO is. Oh, no, we wouldn't participate in anything like that. Let me repeat. The rule of law, as it were, or treaty in this case, says that an attack on, say, Istanbul would be the same as a nuke on New York City, requiring a similar response. That's why I'm scared about what's going on over there. But then again, maybe the younger generation is right, and our current president would say, no, pull out now. You know, I don't care about red lines. I'm not going to war over Turkey. Speaking of the president, he is in Paris now talking about the global warming problem and what should be done. He would like the rule of law, in essence, to apply to what is decided, but it seems to me that would take Congress. Trouble in Chicago, of course. Rahm Emanuel sought for months to keep the public from seeing a video, the awful one, that shows a white police officer shooting a black teenager 16 times. Little overkill there, huh? It's horrible, horrible. Now, I guess they're going to use more body cameras. I mean, in this case, it wasn't like they didn't have video. They had plenty of video. They just didn't release it, right? The feds now will investigate the Chicago PD. The chief of the PD, you know, the chief there has been fired. Emanuel did that, but he may be next. The people in Chicago are not happy campers. And I think that the political body of the chief isn't going to do it. They want Emanuel. We'll see. All right, turning to things more interesting in some ways, the Anomalist, referring to, I don't know if you've seen it. It should be on my website. It was on my website, but things get pushed down. We found a shot of a dome. To me, it looks exactly like an intelligence built this dome. And I believe they did, frankly. I mean, this is on Mars. You can look. Take a look yourself. You know, I'm not generally amazed at rocks, nor do I try to form things in my imagination about what those rocks are. But, you know, in the case of this dome, what the hell else could it be? It's a intelligently made dome on Mars. Now, that's sort of serious. Anomalous said alien hunters say the structure was built by some ancient civilization on the red planet. But honestly, we're going to throw some common sense aside for a moment, and just for the sake of argument, we're going to disagree. Seems they have a sense of humor there. It doesn't look like a man-made structure. It looks more like something organic, in fact. In fact, it looks like a hive. Well, a hive. A hive would imply, if not intelligent design, it would imply instinctual design, at the very least, right? So, if it's not up there, Keith, please put the dome back, the Mars dome. It's just too perfect. I just cannot believe that that occurs in nature. Nor should it occur on a planet without, to speak of, an atmosphere. Okay, again, welcome, welcome. KUJ in Walla Walla, Washington. Glad to have you on board. Coming up in a moment is Todd Robbins, and he is a New York City-based performer and creative artist who has spent decades now specializing in arcane forms of popular entertainment, offbeat amusements, and intriguing deceptions. Throughout his life, he has been immersed in the dark worlds of sideshows, magic, con artists, and seances. In addition to being a featured performer, Todd has often been called upon to speak as an authority on, well, all things unusual. That would be us, right? And has been a consultant on numerous TV shows and movies. He has appeared on more than 100 shows, including Masters of Illusion, The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, The Late Show with David Letterman, 1,000 Ways to Die, which I'm embarrassed to say I watched many episodes of, Good Morning America, currently host of True Nightmares on Investigation Discovery, a show presenting bizarre true tales of mayhem that all have an ironic twist, possibly one that could, well, happen to you. So, Todd Robbins is very weird. You have no idea how weird, but you will. You know anybody who eats light bulbs for real? Eats light bulbs for real? Crunch, crunch, crunch.
On the wild side of midnight. From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Midnight in the Desert with Art Bell. Please call the show at 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
You know, I love that song because of the words, right? And how quickly your yesterdays will become your tomorrows. It sort of gives me a chill because, you know, I remember when I was like 12 years old, sitting kind of bored at my grandma's house with this giant radio. This radio was as tall as I was at that age. And I would sit and listen to, it had shortwave on it, you know. And I would sit and listen to shortwave stations from around the world. And that was when I was 12 years old. And I remember that as it were yesterday. And today I'm 70. So, yeah, when they sing about it'll soon enough be your tomorrows, listen real carefully. Here, ladies and gentlemen, is Todd Robbins from New York City. Hi, Todd.
Hello, Art. It's an honor to be on the air with you.
Well, it's an honor to have you on, although that is yet to be really determined as the night rolls on.
It's true.
Okay, so...
Let me just say... that it's an honor to be on with you because you're a true original, but I have to say it is one of the greatest honors of my life that the fact that you find what I do weird, you that have encountered everything and have met everyone and have been to the four corners of our world and found all the strange things, to think what I do is unusual, I find that a high honor, high praise indeed.
Well, then definitely feel honored because, I mean, what you do is weird. A lot of it is just, you know, really, really interesting and write down sort of the path that I travel on a nightly basis. But, yeah, some of what you do is weird, Todd. You got to admit.
Yes. Right? Yes. I like to jokingly say it's a pathetic plea for attention, but it gets it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I watched A Thousand Ways to Die. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm kind of curious about that show since you had apparent involvement with it, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so A Thousand Ways to Die was pretty brutal stuff, and usually it showed or reenacted these horrible, horrible, horrible deaths. I remember one where this guy was cutting in the ceiling. I can't remember. He was going to spy on somebody, I believe it was. And he was cutting and cutting and cut around and around and around. It was in the bathroom, right? So we could spy on this girl, I guess. And and what happened is he cut too far and the bathtub fell on him. Killed him. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just amazing the depths of ridiculousness that we find in human behavior.
And depravity.
Yeah, yeah. often hand in hand.
Yes, indeed, I'm sure. So you are originally from Southern California, is that right?
Yeah, that explains why I do the unusual things that I do, but it goes a little further than that. I grew up in the Long Beach, California area, kind of on the outskirts of the town there, sort of on the border with Orange County. And Long Beach was a mixed town. It had, the downtown area had kind of seen better days.
Hmm.
And it sprawled into the former farmland. The reason it was called Orange County was because of all the orange groves.
I know, but who moves from Southern California east to New York? I mean, you, obviously. You did.
Yeah, I did because, you know, that was part of it. In growing up there in the suburban area, it was exactly what my parents wanted. They grew up in the Depression. They fought in World War II, and they were looking for pleasant. They were looking for something that was clean, it was safe, it was quiet. Yeah. It was, you know, the American dream. It was what they had fought all their lives for and dreamt of, and they had it. And growing up there, it was pleasant. It had everything you could possibly want except character. everything was sort of manufactured, and the lawns were all manicured, and the landscaped, and then the houses were all uniform, and there's a reason that out of this environment came things like grunge rock and excessive drug use.
Oh, yes.
For me, I didn't turn in that direction, but what happened was I was just always interested in kind of older things, the things of the past that people had forgotten about and sort of discarded. And what happened was I was fascinated by old show business. I would often have bronchitis when I was a kid growing up and would stay at home, and the local stations played these wonderful old black and white movies from the 30s and 40s, and they often repackaged some of the silent films and put a soundtrack and sound effects to it. And so I ended up growing up, watching Charlie Chaplin and Harold Lloyd and Laurel and Hardy and W.C. Fields and the great comedians and all the great classic films, and I just found this more interesting than what was coming our way at the local multiplex.
Hey, look, it's more interesting than most of what's going on radio today.
Oh, yeah, very much so. Very much. When you get on the radio, because, this is the medium of the imagination. You're painting word pictures into the minds and hearts and souls of people as they're listening.
But a lot of that's gone, Todd. It's gone. It's gone.
It's true.
Replaced by formatic radio. Everything's the same. Anyway, you went from...
Well, I'll tell you what the real turning point was. When I was about 10 years old, a magic shop opened in our neighborhood, a little dingy strip mall. And I went in there, had never been in any place like this. And there were these shelves filled with unusual paraphernalia that were specifically designed to deceive the senses, to create illusion. And I just found it was great. And I would go there on Saturday afternoons and take magic lessons, learn sleight of hand, and buy tricks there. And I'd hang out. Wow. The thing I enjoyed most is it was almost like a little clubhouse. There were a bunch of old-timers that used to hang out there, and they would sit and do card tricks for each other and smoke unfiltered Camel cigarettes and swap lies. And
oh,
these guys were ancient. They were like 40 years old. And, here's a kid just kind of just taking all this character in. And it instilled in me a desire to really find real magic in our world. And so I saw all the magic I could. And I would watch all the variety shows, which, the Ed Sullivan and Hollywood Palace, and even the talk shows like Merv Griffin and things, often had variety performers on them. And I would wait to see the magic acts. And then I would see whatever I could live, and a carnival came to our neighborhood. And there on the midway between the rides that had been improved by bribe safety inspectors and the games you couldn't win, there was this large white tent with colorful banners out front that depicted strange, unusual people doing remarkable things. It was the sideshow. And there was a guy standing out front, the outside talker. People call him a barker, but the correct term is outside talker. And he would literally talk people into seeing the show, buying a ticket and come in. And one of the acts he was talking about and pitching was the magic act. So I went in to see the magic act. And it wasn't that impressive, that, but the guy swallowing a sword, someone eating fire, someone lying down on a bed of nails. These things capture my imagination because this was all real. There was no deception here. The sword was real. The fire was hot. The nails were sharp. And it was extraordinary ability beyond the capabilities of the average person. And if you think about that, that's a pretty good definition for real magic. And so I went back to the local magic shop after seeing this and was all excited with all this because I was not only amazed by all this, but I had a desire to learn how to do it. And it turned out one of the guys had worked in a sideshow, and he could teach me how to eat fire. And I learned that. And I also learned a wonderful act called the blockhead act, which is the ability to take a large nail and hammer it into the center of your nose, right into the nasal passage. And, my doctor said I needed more iron. And I learned how to do that, and I also wanted to learn all the backstory. I wanted to know where he learned it and where it came from and all that. So I started...
Can I stop you, Todd? And,
sure.
I don't even know where to stop you. with the nose thing, for example.
Yeah.
Okay, so you drive a nail into your nose for real, or is it an illusion?
No, it's real. It goes straight back into the nasal pharynx. It goes into the air passages, into the top of the throat. It looks impossible, and it's all based upon principles of anatomy. And since most people slept through anatomy, it seems like a miracle.
And if you get it wrong?
Well, you get it wrong, then that's all, folks. That's the thing. There's a risk in all of this, and so I was very fortunate to learn the proper technique, because there's many places that nail can go, and there's only one place it should.
No doubt.
So you have to really learn the technique behind it and learn how to do it from someone who knows what they're doing. It is very much the old style of the mentor and apprentice. It's really
how many beginners get it wrong?
Well, the sad fact is there are a number of people who have seen me on the internet do it, and along with the other things that I do, and they just decide, oh, I'm going to do it. And I get emails from people saying, okay, I want to hammer a nail into my nose. What should I do? And I say, that you should stop. Because they don't know what they're doing, and they're going to end up hurting themselves. It's one of the reasons I started up a sideshow school in Coney Island many years ago, to pass these techniques on so that people, these traditions are carried on, and they're carried on properly so people don't hurt themselves.
Well, it shows how bad I am. There are some people I know that if they were about to try that, I'd say, yeah, cool. Go ahead.
Go for it. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. It improves the gene pool a little bit there.
All right. So what is the Magic Castle in Los Angeles?
Ah, the Magic Castle is a private club for magicians that is in a beautiful Victorian house that's on the hillside there in Hollywood, right above the old Chinese theater, the room which was originally Grauman's Chinese Theater. And right above that, the next block up on the hillside, is this great old house that was started up in 1963 by two brothers who were sort of amateur magicians and had a great love of it. Their father was a magician. And they started up the Academy of Magical Arts. And it is just this wonderful place that you go in, this little tiny room, and there's a receptionist there to make sure everyone is properly attired. You have to wear a coat and tie for men, and women have to be in very dressed up, preferably dresses. But, it's a little more flexible these days. And then once you make sure that everyone's over 21, you go over to a bookcase, and there's a little ceramic owl with glowing eyes. And you say to the owl, you whisper, "Open Sesame," and a bookcase slides back, and you enter this wonderful world where anything can happen, and it usually does. It's been going on for about 53 years now, and it is just an amazing, a wonderful place. There's theaters all over it. There are magicians doing card tricks for each other. There's a little music room, a little parlor where they have a piano.
So magicians only?
Well, it's magicians and their guests. You have to know a magician member to get into the place. So it has an exclusivity quality to it.
Because one would assume that secrets are being revealed.
Not so much. I mean, there are magicians that kind of get together in session, which means they'll sit off in the corner and they'll do card tricks with each other and show it. But they don't normally reveal it to the laity, to the general public, because really all magicians have is their secrets of how they create their illusion.
Yes, sir. What was the recent movie about magicians? The Illusionist, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was The Illusionist, and also The Prestige was the other one. There were two of them that came out about the same time, about the sort of the Victorian era of magic.
So then magicians really are very competitive, very secret, and so forth, right?
Yes, because like I say, it is that wall that they insist upon putting up. And when I do magic, I do the same thing, because you don't want to see behind the curtain, because often the illusion is much better than the reality.
Okay, so I've got to ask you then about the TV shows that have been on that specialize in doing nothing other than exposing how a magician does what he does. How do you feel about those? I imagine not well.
Well, I don't think it has any impact, because the fact is that people don't have a real good reference point for it. I look at those things, and I know exactly what's going on, the mechanism behind it. But people forget details, and it's often kind of disappointing. And the fact is that when the Masked Magician special came about 15 years ago, everyone was like, oh, my goodness, this is the worst thing. It's going to bring magic to, right. And no one's going to want to see magic. And the irony of it is the first one got great ratings. The second one got lesser ratings. The third one got far fewer ratings. Before you know it, it was all gone because people really don't want to know. They like a mystery.
Oh, you're right about that. They like a mystery. One real quick question for you. Is there any such thing as real magic?
Ah, that's a whole long topic.
Yeah, okay. We're coming up on a break. So you think about how you want to answer that. We'll take the break and be back in about 7. You're listening to Midnight in the Desert. Todd Robbins, my guest.
Midnight in the Desert is a wild trip across the Dazed Divisor. Get your ticket to ride by calling 1-952-CALL-ART. That's 1-952-225-5278.
And I'm serving you up a stern warning. You're going to hear about a lot of things tonight. You know, like driving a nail into your nose, eating light bulbs, trust me, that's coming up. And a lot of things. You're just going to hear about all sorts of things. Do not try these things. That's as stern a warning as I can think to give. Maybe there's a way to say it. You may die if you do some of these things. That's pretty stern, I guess. Todd, welcome back.
Thank you.
We've got to really say that, huh? Because there, you get enough thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, you say something like this, and somebody's going to take that nail and give it a try.
Yeah, you know, to a certain degree, the flip side of it is, I don't want anyone to give this a try that doesn't know what they're doing. If they're really interested, they need to search out some sources. And then number, we can get into those later where they can look if they're really seriously interested. But just, there's no flail factor in any of this stuff that I do when it comes to the old sideshow skills. You do it wrong, you end up hurting yourself, and everyone that does it for any extended period of time does end up hurting themselves to some degree. But hopefully, if they have learned properly, it diminishes the danger and the risk. You can't completely eliminate it, but you can diminish it. But you have to know what you're doing.
Okay. Right. Well, the craziness. So what I asked you before the break was, is there any real magic? Now, I investigate the paranormal, every aspect of it you can imagine. I have come to believe that a great deal of it is true and some of it's baloney. But if I ask you about magic, have you ever encountered real magic?
I've encountered many mysterious things, coincidences, or whatever however you want to define them. But there have been many, many strange things that have happened through the years that make you wonder. And I love mystery. That's one of the reasons I love this show and have listened to you for so many years, because I love mystery, because it's just things yet to be understood.
That's true. Well, and how do you define magic? As that? As things yet to be understood?
Yes, exactly. Because though we may love a mystery, people want answers. And that's where the problem comes in. When you settle for easy, comfortable answers that feel good but might not be true. And there's a number of people out there who will be more than willing to deceive you, to take your money on many levels and provide you with answers. And that's where then that's where we get into a whole area that just you kind of scratch your head and say, why are people believing this stuff?
I say it all the time.
Yeah,
I really do. But I still have hopes and some understanding that a lot of it really, I mean, it is real to the degree that you said that we don't understand it. I've had things happen in my personal life completely beyond, you know, any random chance for happening. They were real. Not many of them, just a few, but enough to know that there's substance here somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So. Exactly. And that's what, you know, keeps me going, is wondering what tomorrow is going to bring, what new discoveries and advancements. And, you know, what you were talking about at the top of the show, about you know, discovering something that looks like a dome on Mars. Let's find out more about that. There'll be plenty of people who will give you an answer. And you go, well, okay, and why do you think that? Well, let's find out more. Let's investigate. Let's go further with this.
Have you seen it?
I haven't, but I'm going to. I'm going to take a look at that as soon as we finish here tonight.
Okay, so you don't have a computer in front of you right now?
No, unfortunately, I don't.
Okay. Well, you're one of a very rare American. Almost everybody else.
I do have a computer. It's just not right in front of me. I'm here in the in the living room because I want to be nice and comfortable and enjoy
this. Good. All right, so this Magic Castle, apparently there's a ghost in the Magic Castle that plays a piano, does even requests occasionally, that kind of thing, a ghost that plays a piano. Now,
that's the illusion that they create. Her name is Irma, the story they tell, and it's always not a good story.
Okay.
That there was a family that lived in the house that hated music except for this one daughter, and she would go up to the attic to play the piano that they had sort of thrown up there and hidden away. And when the Magic Castle was open, they found that old piano up there. They brought it down, and we're going to have someone to play it, but they discovered that the ghost of Irma, who passed away many, many years ago, is more than happy to come down and play requests for people. And she, you know, you walk in there and say, Irma, it's so good to see you. How are you feeling tonight? And Irma plays, I feel pretty, oh, so pretty. Oh, you seem to be in a good mood.
Yes.
And she'll play Making Whoopee and say, oh, well, who is it on the other side that you're getting your ectoplasm with? And she plays, I'm just wild about Harry. And so it's fun that way. It's really, it's a lovely, lovely thing.
Yep, sounds like fun. All right. Now, my producer, when she got hold of you, she told me, Art, Todd Robbins eats light bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, right. I said, you know, Heather, those are made of, you know, some sort of sugary substance, just like the windows in movies that break so easily and look like they're
glass.
Real.
Candy glass.
Candy glass, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no. Todd actually eats light bulbs.
Yeah.
I said, you mean like a Philips or a GE standard old 60 or 100-watt light bulb? She said, yes. Mm. I said, I don't believe it, Todd.
Well, it's true. I can give you a little background on this. It's an old stunt that goes back to the fakirs of India. I have to be very careful saying that word on the air. The fakirs of India and those, you know, amazing high holy men that did things like being buried alive and sustaining themselves underground or lying down on a bed of nails or doing all kinds of things that just push the limits of what the body can do. And one of the things they would do is they would take glass, and even before there were light bulbs, they'd take panes of window glass and bite into it and chow down on the broken glass. And this is something that in the early 19th century, a troop of, they used to refer to them as Indian jugglers, but not jugglers in the modern what we think of jugglers, but they were these performers that were doing things different than traditional sleight of hand magic.
Yeah.
And they came to England, and they were a huge hit there. And then the members of the troupe broke off. They taught other people, and little by little it got passed around. So by the middle of the 19th century, it found its way into the dime museums, which were the sideshows of their day. P.T. Barnum had the most famous one here in New York. And they would demonstrate strange abilities, such as taking a sword and shoving it down the throat, and eating glass, and swallowing fire, putting hot fire in
the mouth. Right, well, let's deal with one at a time if we can, and this is eating glass. Now, there's just no way. I can remember once working in Las Vegas. This was years and years ago, and I would bring my coffee to work at the radio station with me in a, you know, in a thermos. And one day I poured my coffee as usual, and apparently I dropped something because it had all this flaky stuff that looked just exactly like glass, and I had been drinking it, and I thought, oh my God, I'm dead as a doornail. I've been drinking glass. It really wasn't glass. It was just that flaky stuff. Maybe some of it was glass. I'm not sure. People called me and said, for God's sakes, eat bread. Quickly, eat bread. So here's the question, Todd. When you eat light bulbs, and I'm told you have eaten more light bulbs actually than anybody else in the world, is that right?
Yeah. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000.
5,000. So it's not a trick. It's not an illusion. You really eat them?
Yeah, like so many of the things, this is all based upon principles of physics and anatomy. And with anatomy, it's amazing how adaptive the human body can be. There's a way of chewing up the glass. The great thing about it is that, you know, like we were talking earlier, a magician does a trick and you go, how did you do that? How did you make that? How did you know what card I selected? And they'll say, I can't tell you. But this stuff, I find it's more interesting the more you know.
It is.
And again, I'm not trying to encourage anyone. I'm sort of explaining this, but I'm not instructing people on how to do this.
No, God, no, don't do it, folks.
No, there's a way of chewing up the glass and swallowing it so it doesn't cut up the mouth and throat.
All right.
There's a diet and regimen I go through every day that keeps the glass moving through my system. It takes about 2 days to go through. So the first part of it is I want to, as I take a light bulb, I bite into the metal part and spit out that, the little threaded part that goes into the socket.
So that's where you bite, right above that.
Yeah. And that's actually the most dangerous part, that doing it, because I have no real control of how that's going to break. And that's often where I'll get a little cut on my lip or gum when I bite into that. But once it's broken, then I can kind of gingerly bite into the glass and start chewing it. And I keep it in the soft areas of my mouth and on the tongue because there's a lot of elasticity there.
Yeah.
You can take a knife blade and actually press your flesh into it. It's the lateral movement that actually cuts it. But putting pressure on a sharp edge will not cut unless you put just so much it's going to penetrate the flesh. But it's amazing how much pressure you can put. It's the same principle as lying down on a bed of nails. But anyway, so I will take the glass and I will chew it up. And here's part of the risk. Is I chew it up and I'm going to swallow it, if I chew it up too fine, it's possible that it can get powdery and get into my blood system, into the blood, and cause all kinds of harm, including the possibility of a stroke.
I'm sure.
But if I don't chew it up fine enough, the pieces are too large and they'll go through the intestinal tract and they can lacerate. So what I'm doing is, while I'm joking and trying to keep it moving and entertaining, I am judging how fine the glass is. And then once I get it to the consistency I want, I then take water and I basically flush it down because I don't want my throat constricting on this because that's where you can get cuts.
So in no way are these light bulbs fake.
No. It's getting harder these days because incandescent bulbs are becoming rarer and rarer.
That's a true statement, yeah.
And the CFLs, those squirrely little things that you probably have right above you, and the LEDs are not consumable. There's a great deal of mercury in those CFLs, so I'm not going to be biting into those because of that. I can if I'm very careful and don't inhale the gas and the fluorescent tube. I can do that, but the wonderful standard Edison bulbs, as they call them, I can do those, and so I've been stocking up as I do this.
So you're actually buying extra bulbs in case they someday become antiques.
Yes. And the irony of it is we can still get them here in New York, but they're now being manufactured in Mexico and places like that because they can't do them here. There is actually a company that still has received approval to do so because they're still needed in certain areas, certain trades. They need incandescent bulbs. They cannot use the CFLs or LED bulbs.
Well, originally I didn't like the new bulbs because they didn't provide a nice warm light, but of course they've got that solved now. So, the days of incandescent probably are numbered.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. However, you know, theoretically, you have to be careful with disposing of these because of that mercury content. And thousands of these are going to our landfills. And the question is, you know, someone said, well, you know, there's more mercury in the air that comes out of the power plant. We're going, well, okay, but that doesn't discount the fact that these bulbs have mercury in them, and they're going to our landfills, and they're breaking under the pressure of all that trash. And what is that going to do down the road as that starts to seep in? Is that going to lead to the zombie apocalypse? I don't know.
So
to bring back the incandescent bulb.
Unlikely. You're trying to keep the art of the sideshow alive, and that is what you do, and that's got to be pretty tough in this day and age. You've got to almost transfer what you do, to the Internet, or how do you do it?
The fact is the sideshow, you know, in its natural habitat, which was in circuses and in carnivals and amusement areas like Coney Island, is all but dead. There is a sideshow out in Coney Island. It's a not-for-profit performing arts group called Coney Island USA. There is the Venice Beach Freak Show, a little wonderful storefront operation in Venice Beach. It was had its own TV, reality TV show a while back. But the carnivals aren't carrying sideshows anymore. Circuses no longer have them. Because the old days, people would spend, it was the highlight of their year in the rural areas around the country, that when the circus came to town, there would be the parade in the morning, and they'd all follow it out to the lot there. They'd watch the tent go up. They'd bring a lunch, and they'd watch them, you know, feed and exercise the animals, and then they're there, and they need something to do, so there'd be some games, and then have a sideshow, which you'd see before the main show, and that would have the guy swallowing the swords, and the fat lady, and the tallest man in the world, the smallest woman, and so on and so forth. Strange, unusual people, and it just was... It was something unusual. It was something beyond your everyday life. It was extraordinary. And that's all gone now because you can find this on the Learning Channel. Any given night is a freak show. And so it comes into your living room now. You don't have to wait for the circus to come to town.
I mean, that's why I said you're weird. You eat light bulbs. So, you know, that makes you extra weird. And for those of you who doubt for one second what I'm saying, I'm telling you right now, go to artbell.com, click on Todd Robbins, and then you're going to have the opportunity. Actually, you don't even have to click on him. You're going to have the You're going to have the opportunity to see a video. It lasts about how long, Todd?
About 2 minutes or so.
No, it's actually 5 minutes and 34
5
seconds.
5 minutes, okay.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
Sorry. In this, they without any question whatsoever, they show Todd eating, I believe, a 60-watt standard light bulb after it's been plugged in.
I used to eat 100-watt bulbs, but I'm on a diet now.
Yeah. You heard that one.
The joke.
Right. But you absolutely do it. Now, a few questions. You mentioned the consistency, and I'm wondering, how do you know that all the pieces reached the consistency that you must have to survive this?
Well,
before you swallow.
That's the second part of it. I want to make certain that when I talk about diet and regimen, there are things I do every day that kind of
like
keep
what?
All my intestinal tract happy with fiber and little lubricants and things like that so that everything keeps moving because I don't want anything to stop on its way.
No.
I don't want anything down there.
No.
Doing it. Want it all moving along.
Yes.
And then before I do a light bulb, I will end up eating usually a decent meal, and if not, I will ingest some as much starchy foods as possible. Someone said eat bread. That was actually a very good thing that they suggested there.
Really?
Let me tell you a little quick story. I was doing a show about the sideshow off Broadway in New York about a decade ago. It was called Carnival Knowledge. And it was about my experience working out in Coney Island and the love of the sideshow and the history of it. And a writer for the New Yorker decided he was going to do a little profile on me, and he was going to bust me. He was going to prove it was a trick. So he brought along one of the heads of gastroenterology at New York University Hospital,
okay,
and Dr. Cohen, and to see the show and interview me afterwards, because he's going to bust me. This guy, if anyone would know that it's a trick, it would be this guy. And so we sat down, and I talked to the doctor, and I revealed everything. I went into much more detail than I'm going into now.
All right, well, hold tight. We're at a break. It's a short two-minute break, Tom. We'll come back and find out how that turned out for you. We have the video on my website of Todd eating a 60-watt GE bulb. It's a little hard to watch, and you're cringing as you watch.
Exclusively on the Dark Matter Digital Network. This is Midnight in the Desert with your host, Art Bell. To call Art, please dial 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
Actually, please don't do that yet. Todd Robbins is my guest, and we're just sort of getting into what he does. One of the things he does is eat light bulbs. He has, in fact, eaten more light bulbs than any human on the planet. Thousands, thousands of light bulbs. Real light bulbs. It's not a trick. I guess in the strictest sense, it's not magic. To me, it's magic. If anybody had told me you could eat an entire light bulb and survive, I would have said it was either magic or it was a trick. But no. I'm going to mention this because, my producer said, oh, hey, Todd, can you keep a light bulb on hand? And I haven't made up my mind about that. We'll see what the audience says. But you know what? There's a video on my website, which is artbell.com. If you click on Todd, you have the opportunity to see him without question, without tomfoolery, without any doubt. He eats a 60-watt GE light bulb. And you cannot watch, you just can't watch without cringing. And I think Todd said in the video one of the things he enjoys most when he eats light bulbs is watching the expression on people's faces. And I get it, so totally get it, because you should have seen mine. I didn't believe it, Todd, but you really do that, huh?
Yeah, it's actually, I think it's a wonderful thing because it shows empathy. It's as if I'm making you eat the glass because we're sort of one at, so there's a strange bond there when people experience this. They don't just watch me do this. It's they experience it.
And they do.
Yeah, and that's what part of the power of all this. And then it fills them with wonder, and that's a glorious thing. Because finding out what's possible in life is what drives people to do great things with their lives. And
it fills you with a lot of little Ginzu knives.
Yes. Yeah.
Is it something that you can toughen to?
No, it's just something that the body does naturally. It's just pretty remarkable what the body can endure.
Okay, I've got this question. Have you ever seriously hurt yourself while doing this?
Not doing the light bulb. And I should just say that I know what I'm doing. We were talking before the break there. This doctor, this gastroenterologist, came and saw me and interviewed me and asked exactly what I was doing. And I told him all the precautions I took. And he went, you know, I should recommend this to my patients. So he understood it was completely feasible what I was doing. And doing one light bulb in a show is not a problem. But out in Coney Island, when I was working in the sideshow there, I would eat 10 to 12 light bulbs a day.
What?
5 days a week. And so, you know, our season started right around in the springtime, right around Easter, or would run until the beginning of October. So you do the math on that, and that's a lot of glass. And that's when you start to notice it. That's when it starts to come through. It takes about 2 days, and that's not terribly pleasant. I'll tell you right now.
You mean the... I can imagine.
I'm just glad I'm sitting down when it happens. We'll leave it at that. We'll let the imagination go with that.
Listen, when I eat hot tacos, you know, I pay. So
yeah.
I can only just, I can barely imagine. Mm-hmm. But have you ever had to go to the emergency room? I guess not. You're saying not, huh?
Not for this.
Or to a dentist.
It's funny in that when I go to the dentist, my dentist often has interns or dental students that are observing, and he says, come in here and take a look at this guy's teeth and see the wear pattern. What do you think caused that? And they go, oh, he grinds his teeth at night? No, no. And then I explain, and in the old days, I would say, and this is what I do, and I unscrew a light bulb and bite into it and chow down on it, which would definitely get their attention. The worst thing that, well, there's two, I've kind of hurt myself twice.
Okay.
One was swallowing a sword. The cardinal rule is you're having trouble, you stop. You just stop. If you're eating fire and the wind comes up and it blows the fire, you stop. The problem with glass eating, and one of the reasons I don't encourage anyone to do it, and one of the reasons I don't teach it when I've taught people how to do things, is because once I swallow it, I can't stop it. And if it goes in the wrong place at the wrong time, I'm in trouble. I've been very fortunate, but I don't really want to encourage anyone else to give this a try because it's a risk I'm willing to take. But I really don't want to encourage anyone else.
You know how when you eat sometimes or drink, it goes down the wrong way?
Yeah. You have to be very careful. Yeah, I have to be very, very careful because, every once in a while I've had a little, piece get stuck in the back of the throat, and that's not pleasant, but it's very rare. The strangest thing that happened eating glass was you're find this pleasant whatsoever, but it's the kind of thing when you meet professional performers. Whether they're actors or magicians or anything, when they get together, they tell war stories. They tell about not the great shows they've done, but the terrible things that have happened that they survived. They lived to laugh and joke about it, and this is one of them. It was the 4th of July in about 1993. It was a Friday afternoon at the sideshow. We were doing a performance, and we had done about four shows and had about another four shows to go. And I bit into the light bulb, and I cracked open a tooth and lost a filling.
Mm.
And I had an exposed nerve.
Mm.
Well, now, the show must go on. So I ended up doing the rest of the shows that day, chewing the glass on the other side, washing it down with water, keeping it all on the other side as much as possible. I then called my dentist, who was out of town, and I couldn't find anyone. So I ended up doing 10 shows the next day, 10 shows the next day, and then about 8 shows on that Monday of that extended weekend before I could get to a dentist on Tuesday to get that tooth fixed.
Hmm.
Yeah. So when people go, oh, you know, I'm a Broadway actor and it's so tough, I do 8 shows a week. Boo-hoo. When I hear about movie stars, oh, we had such a tough shoot. Boo-hoo. Try doing, you know, 30-some shows with an exposed nerve to eating glass. Show business, it's a grand thing.
It's a grand thing, yes. All right, so my producer, I want the world to know this. She's the one behind this. Not me, and not the, any message that I'm getting on the computer. I'm getting some messages on the computer, but my, you know, nice little Heather back there, right? You talk to her, right? Very pleasant little girl. She wants proof. In other words, she wants you to eat a light bulb on the air. Now, I'm not sure I see the value in it, Todd, in that we have this video of you eating a light bulb. And for you to crunch, crunch, crunch here on the air would be kind of interesting. But I'm not sure that it's proof. I mean, you could have the sound of crunching glass on the phone, and that wouldn't be proof. Now, you don't.
It wouldn't be proof. But if you, there's nothing that can be done. For anyone that is listening at home to really prove to them, other than if they see me do it live in a performance, really. And even then, they may be suspect about it. I always light up the bulb in a work light so people can see it's real, because if it is candy, you know, that bulb burns for a while, and candy would melt if it gets that hot. And then I'd hand out the bulb and let everyone examine it. It's very funny, because years ago when I was doing colleges and universities, I had a poster that said, I'll give you $10,000 if you can prove this or any of the other things are fake.
Have you got a smartphone?
I do.
Do you have Periscope on it?
I don't have it installed. I apologize about that.
That's too bad, because, you know, we could sort of get you on Periscope. I mean, come on, folks. Just the sound of crunching here on the radio, I don't think, I mean, this video is way beyond anything we could produce on the radio, save, you know, something going wrong and you quickly having to head off to the emergency room.
But, you know, having seen the video, now this is going to be done specifically for you. So if there's any moment here, this is, you know, this is being done live. Oh, yeah, art for you, anything.
But then after you've said that, now I feel doubly bad for me, anything. All right, so if you suddenly get it wrong.
Say nice things at the memorial service, Art.
I would feel so guilty. Let's come back to this, okay?
Okay.
I haven't made up my mind on this.
Okay.
So, what other things? I mean, you mentioned, for example, somebody who can lie on a bed of nails. Now, you see, that doesn't seem right to me. You say the skin can take a lot. I've got pretty sensitive skin when I think of a bed of nails. And these, that's the difference between, some sort of magic show and a sideshow. In a sideshow, these people are actually doing these things, right?
Yeah. The thing about a bed of nails is that if you were on a single point, the pressure would be so great, it probably would cause a puncture.
Well, sure.
And so it's counterintuitive. You're thinking that if you have 100 nails or 300 or 500 nails, it would make it 500 times more difficult and more dangerous. And it's just the opposite. Because the fact is now your weight is spread out all over all those points. And so there's not enough weight on any given point to cause a puncture into the skin. And you can even take it a step further and have someone stand on top of you. I know a performer, a friend of mine, who does, he has 7 people stand on top of him while lying down on a bed of nails.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? I kind of get that one a little bit. In other words, the weight is, of course, distributed among all the nails. So, okay, maybe that makes sense. I bet it still hurts, though. I mean,
it's not the most pleasant thing, but, you know, the irony of it is it causes a great deal of stimulation, the irritation of the nails in the back there, and it causes a flushing of the blood. And if you have a bad back, it actually can cause increased circulation and help relieve back spasms and things like that.
Oh, I have a really bad back, a really bad one, Todd.
Oh, I might. We have to get together one of these days.
But not that bad. Todd, no, I wouldn't lie on nails.
Embrace the unknown.
Right. There's other ways to get flushes, you know. You don't have to lie on a bed of nails.
You know, the funny thing about it is I worked for a number of circuses, and there was the Russian acrobats who were, you know, doing these things. This one guy would have, you know, three people stand on top of him, you know, on his shoulders, do a two high or a three high in part of the thing. And he had a bad back, and he brought out this thing, and it was a little portable bed of nails that he would lie down on and just rub his back into that to get the circulation going to help sprained muscles and muscle spasms and things like that.
I don't know. Carrying around a little portable bed of nails, good conversation starter.
Yeah, yeah. If people don't, you know, flinch at that, then you know, you might have found the right person to spend some time with.
My producer follows up with, I get messages, you know, during the show. She said, yes, let him do it. how old are you, Todd?
57 years old.
57, and you've had how many light bulbs in your life?
Somewhere around 5,000. So it's time for 5,001, Art.
What have you got there?
I've got a... what is the brand here? This is a Sylvania. I usually like GE bulbs because, you know, GE stands for good eating. But
is there any difference in taste between the brands?
No. The ones I used out in Coney Island were mass produced. They were a little cheaper, and what a lot of people worry about is the coating on the inside. What causes the frosting on the inside? Because there's a belief, a misconception that it's some sort of phosphorus thing, and it's toxic. The reality is it's kaolin. It's basically a white clay that is shot in there and coated on the inside to give it the soft white, and it is non toxic. It's very possible in years past.
Right, but swallowing glass is toxic. Yeah. I mean, if done in slightly the wrong way, or if, I guess this is something you can never hurry, right?
You have to, again, do it right, because if you don't, you can be in big trouble.
Okay. All right, so you're willingly going to do this. I'm not in any way pushing you or...
For my action.
And it's only radio, so people, you can back this up by watching the video if you want, but, I mean, what you're about to hear, I'm not responsible for in any way.
Exactly.
Fine.
Shall we?
Eat.
Okay. You can hear there's the middle part, and here we go.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. This is my favorite part.
Don't put yourself in any danger by talking night.
All this down with New York City water. Here goes.
What's that?
gone. There you go.
Okay. All right, so you washed it down, you said, with New York City water, ha, 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 funny, dangerous, and then I heard another crunch.
Yeah, because, you know, it's hard to get it all down in one swallow. It was pretty fast and everything, so, but I've still got a few little pieces in the teeth there. I know. So there you go.
That was really fast. I mean, really fast.
Yeah, well, life is short.
I'm thinking, how do you that quickly get to the right consistency?
I know what I'm doing. I know what the teeth are going to do. I know what the front incisors and the molars and do, and I can basically move things along.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
That was actually much faster than the one you do on video.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because the other thing about it is there's so much shock value to this, and when people see, the natural reaction is to pull back, and so I've got to really work at keeping them engaged, because the last thing I want people to do is to think he should stop. I don't want that thought. I want to keep them laughing. I, you know, joke about the glass when it goes through, what,
yes.
You know, that's all about. And, you know, it's sort of answering questions as they're coming up in people's minds. So, and that's why that thing took 5 minutes to do, because I was yammering away and kind of giving all the backstory and all the things you need to know so you can appreciate it on a deeper level than just a idiot guy. This is not, you know, there was a TV show on MTV where they did all kinds of stupid stuff. This is not that kind of thing. I'm not just doing this just to prove what an idiot I am. I think this is just fascinating because, again, it's an expansion upon reality. It's reality. It's most amazing that someone can actually do this. I'm just happy it's me. I'm carrying this on, this grand and glorious old tradition.
Who taught you to eat light bulbs?
I learned it from an old guy named Red. Red Garland was his name, and he was worked and he did an act. He was known as the human garbage disposal or the human ostrich at times.
Wonderful.
And he did a whole act where he would light a cigarette and talk and throw the matches in his mouth and eat those and then take the cigarette and eat that. And he had a big little pot of vase of water, a clay pot, and he would drink some water and then say, well, I'm still hungry, and he would go on, and he would take razor blades, the old metal razor blades. You probably remember these. The steel razor blades. He would chew those up, too, because they were very brittle. Now, when they went to aluminum, they became much more flexible, but the old pot metal steel razor blades were very brittle, and he could break those in his teeth and chew them up like I'm doing with glass. And then he would take a light bulb and he'd break it and he'd eat the glass. I started doing the technique of biting into it and spitting out the metal part and chewing it back about 20 years ago. And that's basically how I do it these days.
Will there come a time in your life when you will say, At my age, whatever that is, I must stop eating light bulbs?
You know, when they stop paying me, and if people no longer find it amazing, I will stop. And if, you know, who knows, as I get older, if I start developing health problems that often come with
glass eating?
Old age. Who knows? Who knows? But I'll keep doing it. You know, one of my mentors was a great guy named Melvin Burkhart, who in the year 1929 took this torture stunt from the fakirs of India of hammering a nail into the nose, and he made it into this joyously gut-wrenching act that when Robert Ripley's Believe It or Not, saw him do it in the 1930s, he said, Melvin, you're a human blockhead, and the name has stuck ever since. Melvin Glass' performance was at my wedding back in October 8th, 2008. 2001. We did a performance at the wedding as part of the whole ceremony. We had burlesque, we had puppets, we had musical theater, we had magic, we had a Wild West guy doing roping and whipping, and Melvin did his sideshow act, including hammering a nail into his nose. He was 94 years old, and it was his last performance. He died 1 month later, November 4th, 2001.
Which had nothing to do with the nail?
No, I mean, he had been doing it since 1929, and he just had such joy at doing it, and he set the form for it of, if you can make people smile and laugh, it takes the stink of the shock value off of it, or it diminishes it. Still there, but you play against that, because that's what makes it interesting. You don't make it more, you don't get into people's faces and do this and go, ooh, look at this, ooh, look how gross it is, because people will faint, so they'll run away.
That's right.
That's not good. You want to keep them there so they can really appreciate it, because, like I say, this is just reality at its most amazing.
Most weird, yeah. I would say, yes. Yeah. What do you classify as the strangest performance you've ever done?
The strangest performance I ever done was actually a kid's magic show.
Oh?
Yes. It was many years ago. I got a call from an agent here in New York saying, you do a kid's show? And I go, yeah. And I was doing traditional magic. It wasn't the sideshow stuff. And it was, you know, just kind of comedy magic, and it was all very fun and everything. And I'd done birthday parties and things like that. And I said, yeah. And I said, okay, well, here's the date, and here's the address. It was the Libyan embassy in New York City at the height of Muammar Gaddafi's rule when he was saying death to America.
Right.
I go there, you walk in, and there is this huge picture of one of the freedom fighters, a guy holding an AK-47, a scowl on his face, and the turban, the whole thing.
Sure.
Right there as you walked in, and I thought, you know, well, if they don't like me, what are they going to do, kill me?
Yeah.
And went upstairs, and it was for the embassy, the kids. It was some Libyan holiday. I don't even know what it was. But they hired me to do a magic act for all the kids of the people that worked in the embassy there. And it was interesting because all the wives were in the full burqa, and they were behind a curtain and I could not address them. I could not make any contact with them whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing is they kept peeking around the curtain to watch what I was doing, which I found very strange and very amusing. And I was doing jokes, and they all spoke English. And I'm doing jokes, and I'm doing all this kind of physical comedy with the kids, and the kids are rolling and laughing. And then these women, in, you know, head to toe with just the eyes, you could see them laughing, belly laughing, under the burqas. They were just shaking, as you could hear these high-pitched laughs from these cloaked figures. And it was very strange. I was happy it went well. I was glad to get out of there.
Are you you still feeling okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You sound like you are.
Yeah.
I just, it's like so hard to believe, Todd, and yet I know it's true. And for any of the rest of you who
the
didn't.
The fact that you say it's hard to believe, that just pleasures me mightily.
It is hard to believe. I'm sorry, but to me, whether you have ground glass or well, chunks are obviously worse, but ground glass is still, for example, when it goes through the intestinal tract, I don't care what sort of good foods you've consumed, has the potential to, it seems to me, to eviscerate you from the inside out.
It has that potential, yes. But I took some precaution before we went on the air here, and everything is going to be going through like a broken glass fritter. There's an image for you.
Yeah, thanks for that. you've been doing this since what age?
I started learning stuff when I was about 12 or 13 years old. So, you know, it's 42 years now, 45 years now.
45 years. So,
yeah. And I'm going to keep doing it until I get it right.
I wonder how many thousands of watts or more you've consumed. I mean, if you actually added up the light bulbs by wattage
Yeah, that's true. It's usually a 60 or 75 watt bulb, so I can make the joke about it. I like eating 100 watt bulbs when I'm on a diet. So that, you know.
Is there any difference, by the way, in the wattage of light bulbs?
No.
In terms of your ability to crunch them and consume them safely?
I was just saying I would use the cheaper bulbs out in Coney Island because instead of coating them, they would sandblast them as part of the process.
Right.
And it would hit the bulbs on the inside and make the glass a little bit thinner and a little bit easier on the teeth. But that was about the only thing. But as I was telling you, there's one funny little story.
All right, funny little story. Hold on to it.
Yeah, we'll come back to it.
Yes, good.
Midnight in the Desert doesn't screen calls. We trust you. But remember, the NSA, well, you know. To call the show, please dial 1-952-225-5278. That's 1-952-CALL-ART.
I'm going to sample some of what's been typed to me while all this has been going on. Todd Robbins is my guest. If you would like to call the show, my number is, national number is, area code 952-225-5278. That's area code 952-CALL-ART. Simple, huh? Or you can call on Skype, of course, in North America, and Canada, we're MITD51. MITD51. In the rest of the world, it's MITD55. Now, Todd has much more to talk about. Here he is. But if you want a chance to talk to him, you better get to dialing or Skyping or whatever. So there is a lot more ground to cover, Todd, or people are going to think you just came on to eat a light bulb. And you're here for more than that.
Oh, yeah. I've done a number of strange things throughout my career.
Okay. Well, have you encountered things in your career that you could not explain?
Yeah, there's all sorts of strange coincidences. There's the one that perhaps is just a coincidence, perhaps. I'm not terribly proud about this, but I'll make this rather quick here. I have done a lot of entertaining through the years, traditional magic walk around at corporate events.
Hmm.
And it's a challenge, especially in New York here, because I will go in and to an event and I'll have a deck of cards in my hand. I'll walk up to a group of people at a corporate event and say, good evening, I'm Todd Robbins. I've been invited here to add a little fun to the evening. May I do something for you? And they'll look and you go, no.
Yeah.
And I will say, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to do something anyway, and if you don't like it, I'll refund your misery. This one event was many, many years ago. It was for a financial firm. I don't want to mention which one. It was for a financial firm, and I knew I was in trouble when I walked into the room, and there were 300 men and 20 women. And these guys were all bros. They were smoking cigars because part of the entertainment at this holiday event was they had a cigar roller, and they're smoking their cigars, and they're talking, and they're just jocks.
Mm-hmm.
And I go up to a group, and I say, good evening, I'm Todd Robbins. I've been invited here to add a little magic to the evening. May I do something for you? And one of the guys, the alpha male of this group, says, yeah. And he grabbed the deck out of my hands. He said, yeah, I want to see a card trick. Here, Jimmy. And he turned to his friend and said, take a card. And Jimmy took a card. He said, show it to everyone, but don't show it to this. And I won't say what the name he called me.
Not a nice name.
It was part of the anatomy. Let's put it that way. And he said, this guy.
Yep.
And so he showed the card around, and he said, put it back on the deck. And he shuffled the deck, and he shoved it back in my hand. And he said, now find his card. And again, use a different little phrase.
Got it.
And I was like, what the heck was going on? Who are these people? And I'd like to say that he was unusual, but they were all like that. Later on in the evening, I was doing a little demonstration of an old street con called Fast and Loose. It's the Endless Chain. And I preface it by starting off by saying, this is a scam, it's a con, it's a game you can't win. And let me show you how it's done. And I would lay it out there, and I would throw money down and say, give it a try, and they would lose. And I would let the money, I would throw down $20, and I'd throw down another $20, and I'd show them and make it simpler for them to win, and they'd still lose, and still lose, and still lose, and still lose, until I get to the end and reiterate the theme of it, which is, this is a scam, it's a con, it's a game, you can't win. As soon as I finished the demonstration, a guy came up to me and said, you know, I can beat you at that. And I said, well, no, I guess you didn't hear that it's a scam, it's a con, it's a game, you can't win. And he goes, oh, you're chicken. Now, again, he didn't say chicken, he used a stronger phrase.
Okay.
And I looked at him like, what? And I just said, well, okay, you got any money? And we played for about 10 minutes, and I beat him out of $150, at which, at the end of it, I threw it back at him, and I said, it's a scam, it's a con, it's a game, you can't win. 3 hours this went on. I was engaged for 3 hours to do this stuff, and it was a torturous affair from beginning to end.
All little kings of the world, right?
Oh, so much so that when I walked out of there, I had but one very dark thought on my mind, which is if I woke up the next day and found out that everyone there was dead, it wouldn't bother me.
Yeah, yeah.
Now
that's a rough audience.
Yeah, it's a rough audience, yes. And here's the quirky little thing. This is sort of like what we do in True Nightmares, a strange tale that has an ironic twist to it. All the guys in that room were working at their little cubicles there in their office.
Right.
At the top of the World Trade Center.
Oh.
About 9 months later. And all those guys are now dead.
Did you, when you found that out, after having had that thought, it must have troubled you some.
It gave me pause, to say the least. It made me wonder, and I don't wish harm to anyone. That's just a strange coincidence. You talk about dark matter. That's about as dark as it gets.
That's pretty dark matter, all right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So don't mess with me, Art, because I'm a very powerful man.
So, True Nightmares. I have not watched. What's it all about?
Well, Investigation Discovery is one of the Discovery channels, one of the networks that Discovery
Communications has. Oh, yes. I understand.
And it features true crime. And they wanted to do something a little bit different, something along the lines of The Twilight Zone,
mm-hmm.
or Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And so I am the host. I am on camera introducing the stories, and the stories are all true. In each episode, we do 3 stories. And they're all about murder and mayhem, very quirky, that have an ironic twist to them. And the fun thing about it, the darkly fun thing, is you'll see a scene in which a man and woman are sitting there, and they get into an argument, and she picks up a knife and is going to stab him, and the camera pulls back from the table they're sitting at, and at the other side of the table, eating a salad is me, and I'll look up at the camera and say, and this is where things took an ugly turn. So it has this very dark, wry,
sure.
humor about it.
Dry humor.
That harkens back to people like Alfred Hitchcock.
And again, you need that humor, don't you, when you're doing this kind of very dark stuff?
Yes. And the thing about it is, people run to investigationdiscovery.com to find out more about these stories because they think they can't possibly be true. And then they Google them and find out they are true. And we did 6 episodes. It was our test season there, our premiere. The episodes have all aired. They do show up on Investigation Discovery. They are on Investigative Discovery On Demand if you have that as part of your cable service.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go to investigationdiscovery.com and go to True Nightmares, and they have 4 episodes there. And the stories are wild. There's some things about serial killers. There's some things about this quirky fate. There was one story that happened a number of years ago about a woman who went for a lovely day at a community pool, and and she didn't swim very well, but she saw the kids going down the slide. And the water was very murky that day. There was a problem with the filtration system. I mean, it was safe, but it was cloudy. And it was one of these perfect storms of everything coming together in a strange way, then there was very dark results. She went down the slide, went into the deep end there, and she drowned. And what people don't realize is when people drown, they usually don't flail about saying, help me, help me. They just go under the water, and they kind of submit to it, and they drown. And she sunk to the bottom, and because of the cloudiness in the water, her body was in the pool for 3 days, and no one noticed.
Yikes.
The pool was open for 3 days. Kids swimming back and forth, families cavorting in the water, people having a great time, and there was a corpse in the deep end. Finally, after 3 days, again, quirkiness is that some kids broke in to the pool. They climbed over the fence to take a midnight swim. And they were swimming around, and by that time her insides had bloated, there was gas, and her body floated to the top, and they were swimming around, and they bumped into something, and when they realized what it was, well, let me put it to you this way, they're not going to be breaking in and swimming in pools ever again.
Right. Well, a lot of these things are like you're eating a light bulb. You can't unhear that. Now, the range of comments is astounding. Astounding. Worst thing you ever did, Art, turning off your show, first time ever, WTF. Then that's awesome. Radio Gold. Oh, my God, that's so not okay. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. It's either Radio Gold, God, that was great, or, you know, I'm going to turn you off. And too late, buddy. You can't unhear that. Or if you go to the website, you can't unsee it once you've seen it. So,
well, you know, it's what you said about pickles early on, you know, at the top of the show. It's that tune in tomorrow night, there'll be something different. I guarantee it's an ever changing landscape.
Oh, that's for sure. That's what we do here. So, why do you like the dark and the mysterious and the stuff that you can't ever like unsee or unhear? Why?
Well, because it's, you know, you were talking about this earlier. When things become homogenized, it just loses such character. And where the character comes from is really the darkness, the strange, the unusual things that happen.
Right.
And this is, I think, is defining. As a matter of fact, one of the things I'm working on right now is another series, which is going to be sort of a travelogue of me going around and telling the stories about locales all across the country, that these are the stories that the Chamber of Commerce don't want told about the history of places. But they're the ones that really define the terrible things that have happened there. And again, the fact that we've overcome these and survived says a lot about the human nature. And we become, you know, it's the whole thing about that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger. We learn from these. We grow from these. It's not our successes. It's not our triumphs. It's the tragedies. It is the disasters. These are the things that are fascinating. And people are, you know, you see it every time you drive down a highway and there's a long line of people because there's an accident. And people just want to take a look at it.
I know.
They want to see
it. I know. They don't admit it, but yes, they want to see it. Now, I want to bring this up, Todd.
Alive.
I want to bring this up, Todd, because Discovery used to be a really straight-laced network, and it was almost like, you know, Science Channel. You see it on Discovery, it's got to be true. Discovery, in recent years, very recent years, has turned to horror-tainment, right? And but you're right. You're absolutely right, and the people out there listening to me know it right now. You can't turn away from it, can you?
No.
Well, you can, but I mean, the truth is that most people decry it, but watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, and, there's darkness in us all. And if you acknowledge that, Carl Jung said that the best way to understand the darkness of others is to come to grips with the darkness in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you understand it's there, that's the best way of dealing with it, that so you don't go down the road of these dark people that we chronicle in True Nightmares, and that you see doing awful things all around us. It just reminds us that we all have that potential, and we should celebrate the fact that we haven't gone down that road and we haven't made those choices.
Are you fairly sure that that's the effect that it has, that it doesn't cause people to, I don't know, go off the deep end? We live in a pretty weird society these days. I wonder how many people watch something like that and then emulate.
Well, I don't think that's the case. When you look in the profile of people who are doing dark things, there's usually a great deal of repression there. There's a great deal of, sitting on top of all this and feeling that, you know, the world has wronged them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, they grab a gun and go off and do something very, very dark and awful to their fellow man.
They do.
Whereas if you have a little bit of a release valve by watching this stuff and knowing that you would never want to go down that route, it maintains sanity as opposed to encouraging insanity.
Okay, well, I hope that's right. Yeah. But it seems like we're facing an increasing amount of this in society right now. Really crazy stuff. Or, I don't know, the media just chooses to cover more of it. But now there's more of it going on, I'm pretty convinced. How about you?
It's a tough thing. You know, there's so many changes in our world, and people find change so threatening that they want to, many people want to revert to fundamentalism on in many flavors. And that's fine. That's fine. If that's what you want, you have that freedom. But when that festers and becomes the desire to destroy those which are different from you, that's when you run into the real problem. And that's what we see bubbling up, because there have been people who have made a great deal of profit by spouting hate, and that's a whole different thing than what we're doing.
Okay, you say, apparently, that there is no such thing as the truth. Now, when you make that statement, what do you mean, no such thing as the truth?
Well, when you hear someone say the truth is, let me tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I find more often than not what you're getting is one of two things that have been mislabeled as truth. You either get fact or you get opinion, which is people's reaction to having experienced fact, their interpretation of what fact is. And fact doesn't require any help from anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
The facts are facts, and they stand alone. An opinion is, like I say, people will try to put more weight behind it by saying it's the truth. And so, like I say, when someone says this is what the truth is, chances are you're hearing either fact being presented or opinion. And now, having said this, the question is whether it is fact or opinion.
Having said all we've said, is there anything you can think of that truly frightens you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the IRS.
They're pretty scary.
Yeah, power is really frightening. There are people out there that will use... Well, they will use fear, and they will use influence, and they will use whatever they can to manipulate. And those are the things that frighten me, and we see so much of it going on in the political realm these days. And people that just, I made a joke on Facebook, and that I said, okay, all right, enough of this. Let's bring out the real candidates for the presidency. Come on. Okay, enough of the jokes. Let's find, we have the real.
Yeah, and how did that go over?
Yeah, and well, people, you know, they laughed about that, but it's kind of sad that, you know, it's not about leading a country. It's more about appealing to people to get the vote, enough votes to get in the office.
All right.
It's not about.
All right, hold it right there. We've got a quick break. Presidency is an interesting topic. I'm Art Bell. This is Midnight in the Desert. Join us as you will.
Imaginary lovers never turn you down.
Is Midnight in the Desert. To call the show, if you're east of midnight, call 1-952-CALL-ART. If you're west of midnight, call 1-952-225-5278.
Okie doke, everybody. Here it comes, the mini talk, and then underway we go. If you would like to, you'd like to speak to my guest and ask a question, Todd Robbins, the national number, once again, is 952-225-5278. That's 952-CALL-ART. Or, of course, you can call on Skype at MITD51 in North America and MITD55 in the rest of the world. And I guess I have one more question, then we'll go to the phones for Todd, I promise. And that is this, Todd. You said that... Well, you've attended seances, right? So have you ever seen a seance that you regard as legit?
Yeah, actually.
Really?
And it was an amazing phenomenon. It was on my 30th birthday. I threw a party. I wanted to play around with some table tipping. Which is sort of like a large version of a Ouija board. And so I was going to gather some people together and just put them around a table and put them in the right mood and see what would come up with.
Yeah.
And the word got out, and before I knew it, I had 50 people who wanted to come. So I rented a room and set up all these tables. And it was, I just put everyone in the right mood, candlelight, the whole thing, and extinguished the candles one by one as I was telling them what to expect and what could happen. And it was an amazing phenomenon, what people experienced. The tables moved, people saw things, and people had imagery come to them of dead loved ones. And it was a very, very interesting and powerful experience that had no trickery, no deception to it whatsoever, other than what was going on in the hearts and minds of the people there.
Well,
and people were still talking about it, and that was almost 30 years ago.
How do you come out of something real like that without being a very changed person?
Oh, I don't think you do come out of it. I think you are changed. That's the great thing about it. It just, again, it ties back to the mystery of what was going on in that room. And I don't really have answers for that.
All right. Well, look, I would like to let some people ask questions.
Sure.
So let's do it. You're on the air with Todd Robbins. Hi.
Hi. Good evening, Art. I just wanted to say welcome back. We missed you.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome. And also, I have two questions for Todd. Todd, first of all, I live here in the Bronx, New York. My name is John.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, first of all, where do you appear generally? I mean, do you have shows that you go on regularly in the city?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I had a show we did off-Broadway called Play Dead, and that closed down, and we've toured that around. We're actually going to be opening that in Las Vegas, but in New York, I'm one of the regular performers and actually one of the producers of New York's longest-running magic show called Monday Night Magic. It is every Monday night at the Players Theater in Greenwich Village. You can find out more information at MondayNightMagic.com.
Hi, great, great. Now, one other thing. I was with the NYPD for about 25 years, and I do agree with what you said regarding people having macabre part of their, you know, internally, definitely inside them, because I've been to enough accident scenes and everything else where people just want to look and see everything that's going on.
That's
they don't
right.
care how horrific it looks. But the other question I had for you was basically, do you ever get, just in general, stomach issues in general? Because I know I had food poisoning a few months ago, and, I mean, you're eating glass and you don't get sick from it. Is there anything that
food poisoning, you think you're going to die. It's that
exactly.
bad.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when it's, yeah, the food poisoning, and I've had, you know, a few strange things happen, but nothing related to the glass, remarkably, because part of it is I have to stay on top of it and keep everything healthy down there as much as possible. So I've been very fortunate.
Ah, that's great. Well, thanks so much, and keep up the great stuff. I mean, you made me cringe with the chewing on the glass tonight, too, so it was definitely worth it.
Totally. But the fact of the matter is you can do this, and at home you cannot do this,
no,
folks, and that's the big one. I always worry. I'm sure you must too, Todd, that somebody will try it at home. And even though what you do is real, people have to understand that if they try it, well, they do it wrong. Could they die?
Yeah, you know, it's similar to watching Nick Walenda walk on a wire across a canyon. If you try that, you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, you watch someone do a triple somersault, if you go, you know, or you know, any dangerous stunt, it is a stunt that I know how to do. And if you try it, you could end up hurting yourself severely.
Well, I do appreciate the fact that what you do, which you call Sideshow, is real. In other words, it's not trickery, even though it's bizarre, maybe hard to watch, and you'll something you remember for all the rest of your life. It is real. So it's not hokum, it's not baloney.
Yeah.
You've really done something that has in some way probably changed somebody's life. All right, let's go here, I think, to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, maybe?
Yeah, hey, Art, this is Eric calling from Clemens, North Carolina.
Okay.
Just bedroom community of, comes off that exchange. Listen to you on my TuneIn radio app. And I'd like to say good evening to my friends at the Midnight Fans Forum. They're all chatting away right now.
That's the way to do a plug. By the way, if I may, please, as you listened to that light bulb being eaten here on the air, how did it hit you?
Like I'm pretty good at visualizing. I could actually see him.
Yeah,
it made me cringe.
Yeah, okay, all right. So even on the radio, I was wondering, you know, I thought bad enough to actually see it, but to hear it, well, that's, now I realize that's also bad. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I had married into a showbiz family. My wife's grandfather was the past president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians, so
oh, yes.
Charles Roskam, and one of my best friends growing up was a guy who had traveled with the Amazing Keith and Jeannie, and they were actually one of the top 10 traveling magic acts. And as I got to know him, he would never tell me how the trick was done, but if I figured it out, he'd say, yeah, you're kind of close. And it just occurred to me that even if you know how it's done, it's still magic.
Yeah, but you know, again, I want to draw the line. This is not magic, meaning there's no trick here.
Now, this is like a total, like the blockhead, you know, like the
really
blockhead act and the geek and all that. Yeah, the real physical thing meant to make you cringe.
Works.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for what he does because that's a...
Thank you.
That's a whole art form in its own right. Did you appear for the guest? Todd, did you appear in an episode of X-Files years ago as a blockhead?
No, that was my friend Jim Rose.
Okay.
Who had a troupe that performed the Jim Rose Circus Sideshow. They performed the Lollapalooza tour and opened for rock and roll bands. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they did Ozfest.
Yeah.
Years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There was that's where you'll find it down in Charlotte.
You'll find Sideshow in rock and roll venues these days, more often than not. They're often paired with burlesque performers and things like that, but that's usually where you'll find Sideshow troupes.
Well, there was so many attractions. I'll put it that way. Attractions just walking around the general crowd, you know. It was,
yeah.
You know, I've got some piercings and some illustrations, but that's all some...
Yeah.
Walking around Ozfest, you know, I didn't have to pay admission to the.
It's true. It's a challenge to put people on stage that are stranger than the ones that are watching it.
Yeah, I can imagine. All right, I forgot to give out a number, by the way. We do have a first-time caller line. I'm trying to give that out now every show. So if you're a first-time caller to the show, it's area code 775-285-5800. 775-285-5800. And if you can't get through there, you can try area code 575-208-7787. I've got a lot of lines. I might as well make use of them. Let's go to, I think, West Virginia. Howdy.
Hi, this is Kevin. I have a real quick story to share and then a question for your guest.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. This is back whenever I was about 10 years old. We were at a party for a friend, and my cousin was with me. He was about 19, and they had a magician doing card tricks, you know, standard pick a card, that kind of stuff. And whenever he came to us, he didn't have us pick a card. He just kind of said, think about a card, right? So I thought, I'll pick something weird, like, you know, four spades, something not very common, you know, not ace of spades or whatever. I didn't know what my cousin picked, and, you know, he shuffled and he's talking and, you know, going through all that. And then he hands us each a card and he says, turn them over at the same time. I turn mine over and it's, you know, it's the card I thought of. And my cousin, when I see his, I'm just thinking, like, that can't be real, because it was the information card that they handed out on, like, the bicycle decks, you know, the little alphabet. And I thought that was just bizarre. And I can't think of how that could have been a trick. We never touched the card. He never asked us anything besides think of a card. And my question is, have you ever encountered something like that where you can't even conceive of a trick? Like, it just has to be something weird.
Yeah, there's a card guy in Sweden named Lennart Green, who worked as a night watchman. He's a doctor, and he worked as a night watchman in an insane asylum. And would there be there all night long with all the patients having been medicated. He had nothing to do except watch the monitors, making sure nothing was happening. And he would spend 6 hours a day or night practicing card tricks. And he can do things. He does a thing called the laser count, which he will take a little laser pointer and put a little spot on the table, and he will deal cards. He will deal cards into the that little spot. And they will vanish right before your eyes. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
That sounds like somebody in distress. Is that?
Yeah. Well, my 7-year-old just woke up.
Ah.
That's he'll be fine.
All right. Let's go outside the country to Daniel.
Hello.
Hello, Daniel. Where are you?
Hey, I'm in London at the moment.
London at the moment, okay.
Yeah, just waiting for my bus and having traffic on the way to work. So, anyway, just a quick one. I'm getting really annoyed with the fact that people are still falling for the cup and ball trick in London with money. So I was just wondering if you knew any way, like, to psychologically kind of trick them into losing.
Yeah, it you can't win those kind of con games, because it's it looks like one guy doing it, but chances are there's a whole crew. So that even if you know what they're doing and you pick the right key, you find where the key is under the shell, chances are you're going to walk, if you do walk away with money, you're going to walk around the corner and you're going to be roughed up, and they will end up taking your money back. Because they don't, you just can't win at those games. The best way is to walk away. It's also tough because you see people playing them, and you know they're a scam, and you want to enlighten them. But you really can't. You have to be very, very careful. because I've seen people try to, you know, smarten up people that are playing these games and get punched by the guy who's about to lose his money, saying, you know, I know what I'm doing. Get the hell out of here.
Mm-hmm.
To get the language there. And so it's a no-win situation. The best thing you can do is, you know, just find a local cop and say, look what's going on, and try to chase them off, and hopefully they'll go away.
That's exactly, you know, pretty much what most people do. One of my great entertainers at the moment is Darren Brown, and I was just wondering what you thought of some of his stuff at the moment.
Well, I like Darren. Darren's a wonderful entertainer, and by the way, in his current show, he's eating glass, and you'll never guess who taught him how to do that.
You did.
Yeah. Because Darren has done it in the past on a little one-off basis. He wanted to run on a regular basis on the show. So we had another lovely Skype session in which we talked about all that goes into it. And he's a wonderful, wonderful guy, wonderful performer, and just a great fellow.
Todd, does it take a long time, caller, thank you, to learn how to safely, if there is such a word, even eat glass?
It was something I kind of worked up. It was a step-by-step thing. Again, I'm not instructing anyone how to do this, but I kind of got used to biting a little piece of glass, chewing it up, and then spitting it out, and then eventually working up, getting
more
aware of what was going on, and then going into the swallowing of the glass. So it took a little while, but it really, once you learn how to do it, you just do it. It's not like sword swallowing takes a long time to learn, because you have to really train your body to and have proper alignment, and all that takes a great deal of training.
Well, you said that you can put pressure on, more pressure than you think, on skin, but when you're swallowing a sword, you are sliding by skin with something sharp, right?
Well, the thing about it is the swords usually are not sharp.
Even
but they are solid.
Yeah.
And you have to overcome the gag reflex, and you have to have proper alignment and just know what you're doing, because there's so many things you can puncture down there. It's not really, with along the lines of glass eating, it is the most dangerous thing to do. The thing about it is that if you do it and you're having trouble, you can stop. Whereas once you swallow the glass, you don't have that option any longer.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a rumor that Anton LaVey, founder of the Church of Satan, and I've had somebody on from that church, sent you a fan letter?
Yeah. I did an instructional video. There was so much bad information out there about sideshow stunts.
Yes.
Many, many years ago, I did a video clearing up some of the misconceptions and instructing in some of the simpler of the sideshow skills, and also giving a little background about the history and all that. And I was approached by a guy who wanted to do, had some questions about a sideshow stunt that I had originated, and he was asking permission to do it. And he said, can I do anything in trade? I am a performer. I really haven't originated anything, but maybe there's something else in my life that I can be of benefit to you. I run a haunted house, and I'm also a deacon in the regional director of the Church of Satan. Yes. And I go, stop right there. Really? And he goes, yeah. And he said, by the way, Dr. LaVey is a big fan of yours. I go, what? He said, I visit him every year, and I always like to bring him a little gift. And last year, I gave him your video, and he watched it, and it reminded him of his days working in the carnival, because he had that background. And he liked it so much, he sent me this lovely note. I said, could I get that? I'm sure. And it was thanking him and saying lovely things about what I did and how much he admired it and how much it reminded him of the days of his youth when he worked in the carnival.
Maybe he liked, I don't know how to put this, the mood that you put people in as they watched you devour glass.
Mm-hmm. That might be part of it. He, people that work in the carnival and sideshows and place like that, there's a little phrase called with it, which means you're with it, for it, and never against it. And once you get involved, it's pretty much like being in the military. Anyone who's ever been in the military, whether they're, you know, in World War II or any of the other conflicts, or even if they never went to war, there's a bond.
Of course,
all
yes.
people in the military. And it's the same thing with the carnival, that once you are of that community, you always have a bond with anyone else that is part of that. So I think he saw that in me, and it reminded him of his days, and there was that. And I had an invitation to meet him, but I didn't get a chance to get out to San Francisco in time, and he had passed away.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Let's go to El Segundo. Is that right?
Ah, yes. Lavish El Segundo.
Hello? El Segundo, hello. Going once, going twice, gone with the wind. Wilmington, North Carolina, your turn.
Hello, Art Bell?
Yes.
All right. I've listened to you for a long time, listened to your other show, but I never called before.
Yes, sir.
I want to give a shout-out to the End of the Internet website. I'm user Philip Deedes.
The End of the Internet website?
Yeah, the secret website.
Yeah, okay.
And the guest was talking about, like, how he swallows glass and gets it to his throat, but coming through the other end, do you have a technique for that, or don't you worry about getting cut or something, or what do you do?
Well, I guess no more than going through. I mean, think of it. It goes through your whole intestinal tract, right?
Mm-hmm. You don't feel it going through your body or anything? Or?
Yeah, sure, that is a good question. Do you, I mean, have you spent days in ever in bed just with clutching your stomach going, ow?
Well, like I say, one light bulb isn't really a problem, but when you end up doing it, when I was doing multiple light bulbs out in Coney Island, it would get a little grumbly. It would get a little there'd be a little irritation, but, you know, it's just it's bumping around down there, and there's a lot of it. But it all would
come out the other end?
Happy ending. Yeah, yeah. Would, basically, I have no porcelain left on my toilet bowl. It's been sort of sandblasted away. We'll just leave it at that. There's an image for you.
All right. Thanks. I love you, Art.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Take care. That's another image that I just won't lose soon.
Well, there you go. I'm a giver. What can I say?
Yeah. Do you actually ever go to these so-called seances, the ones that are not the real McCoy? And you've articulated, you've seen the real McCoy, which is also something, by the way, and bust them, you know, actually.
No, because, no? Again, it's oh, I'm going to get into trouble, but there's, you know, so much of the people that are out there these days, they aren't doing physical phenomenon as they did in the old days. You don't see ectoplasm flowing forth. You don't see tables floating through
right,
the air.
Right.
You don't see ghosts walking around. You get message services, which is people getting a message from the dead and bringing it forth for the living.
Yes.
And that's the majority of the stuff that you're going to see these days. And with that, you kind of wonder whether they're really feeling that they are getting something, or if they're just con artists that are just saying things that people want to hear.
Exactly.
And even the ones that are blatant frauds, the people that are sitting there are so happy to hear what they're saying.
Yeah,
they're
I know.
That there's no win of standing there and saying this is fake.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to hear that.
I do get it. I really do get it. Even if it's fake, if it's comforting to that person,
yeah,
then
that's what they want. And that's the essence of con artistry, is that you have to understand not only what people will believe, but what they want to believe. And then feed that to them, and that's where you can make a profit.
Yes, sir. I get it. Let's go to Honolulu, Hawaii. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
This is Nisa from Dino's group, Art Bell Into the Night.
Welcome to the program.
I'm really enjoying the show. And, Mr. Robbins, I wanted to know, you know, I freak out just swallowing a fishbone. And here you are chewing all these glass bits and whatnot. what happens to your tongue when you're eating? I mean, you know, when we eat, the tongue kind of like mingles with the food and stuff like that, and mm-hmm. I just can't wrap my mind around all those bits. How do you not get it shredded?
Well, it you know, that's the great thing about it, is it's the tongue is very, very rubbery, and you know, one little piece of glass can actually get lodged, but the irony of it uh-huh. is that when you have a big pile of glass on your tongue, it kind of holds together in such a way that it doesn't cut up the surface there, because there is enough give to it. And then when I drink the water, I wash it all down, and it all flushes very quickly, and so that causes, there's no real problem there.
Wow. I'll never see the tongue the same again. It's amazing.
It is amazing, and it's, you know, this is not, again, a trick. You know, people look at this, and I didn't believe it. When I was told that he ate light bulbs, I just didn't believe it. And now he has eaten more light bulbs than anybody in the world. Actually,
In Ripley's, believe it or not, for having done that.
Are you really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, since you ate all those light bulbs, could you remember the very first one that you successfully ate? Now you know?
Your first light bulb.
Yeah, I was being taught by a guy who showed me, he broke a light bulb, he took a little piece of glass, he said, no, just take this and bite it, chew into it, and spit it out.
Why not begin light with a little night light, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like Christmas tree lights. You know, they're like little appetizers.
Man.
It was that, and then a little bit more, until I was up to doing what I'm doing now.
Mm. An appetizer.
Oh, okay. I'm still cringing, but, thank you for the experience. Thanks, Art.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
My old friend, Melvin Burkhart, that 94-year-old, he used to, as he was hammering a nail into his nose, says, you know, it beats working for a living.
Well, does it really? I mean, hammering a nail into your nose.
He also would say it's a hard way to make an easy living.
Yeah, well, you really can't afford to be distracted when you're doing that, right?
No. You do need a great deal of concentration.
I mean, tell me how this is done. You take a nail
mm-hmm.
and hold it where on your nose, please?
Right into the nostril, straight back, not up, not down, but straight back.
Straight? Really?
And if,
that can't be.
If you just Google me, chances are you'll see me with a nail in my nose.
Now, wait a minute. Hold on here. If I just take the end of a pen, ugly as that may seem, and I hold that straight into my nose, there's no way. If I drive a nail in there, it's going... Oh, where is
it's
it
the
going?
Air passage. It's how you breathe. It
oh, come on.
Straight back in the top of the throat.
Well, I can see that if it's going up.
No, it's actually straight back.
Straight back.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem like that would be possible. And then they, what, hammer it with a hammer?
Yeah, there's a technique holding it, you know, so that when you do it, you're not getting the full force of the blow of the hammer. That's the one little trick, little finesse of the thing, but it's very effective.
Okay, so the nail is still going back there.
Mm-hmm. And when it gets to the back of the throat, you stop. Because if you keep going, you go into the brain, and that would be a bad thing.
Yes. Anybody out there do any of this stuff?
No.
This is
Coney Island. If people go to ConeyIsland.com, they'll see where the sideshow school is there, and they have lessons, and will teach people how to do things—not glass eating, but the blockhead and sword swallowing and fire eating and things like that. It's the only real place you can learn in a classroom setting.
Can you explain fire eating?
What was that?
Can you explain fire eating? That's another one. All right, hold on. We're at this break. Feel free to join us, folks. Fire eating's up next. 952-CALL-ART or Skype, North America, or outside North America, rest of the world. Feel free to join in. A nail in the nose. Not for me.
Midnight in the Desert. To call the show, if you're east of midnight, call 1-952-CALL-ART. If you're west of midnight, call 1-952-225-5278.
That's the number. Either way, Todd Robbins is my guest. He, among other things, eats light bulbs. Lots and lots and lots of light bulbs. And let me give out the other numbers. Our first-time caller line, if you would like to avail yourself of that, if you've never called the show, area code 775-285-5800. That's 775-285-5800. I guess I need to get to Ross, right, and have him do some more for me, because I don't do them that quickly. And then, of course, our Roswell line, if you want to come through the Roswell dimension, that would be area code 575-208-7787. And the respect that I have for Todd is that he's not, how can I put it, he's not doing tricks. You know, I understand what tricks are. They're not real. What Todd does is real. It's kind of like, oh, I guess Ripley's Believe It or Not. As a matter of fact, he said he was in Ripley's Believe It or Not. And Todd, I am a big fan of con movies. There is the short con, there is the long con. These people doing short cons frequently get beat up, right?
Yeah, you have to be very careful when doing that kind of thing. That, you know, the great con artists, and I use great not really as admiration, but as just fascination, work on such a level, like Bernard Madoff, that people, you know, fight to give them their money, and then when they take it from their victims, the victims thank them for taking their money.
Yes,
it's amazing. But you know, there are cons that go on, small cons that people don't even realize a crime has happened. There's a thing called the bottle drop, which happens, I guarantee it was happening tonight in New York City, in which you're walking along and someone bumps into you and they drop a plastic bag and you hear glass break and you kind of go on your way and they grab you and go, you know, you did that on purpose. You knocked that out of my hand. That was a $35 bottle of scotch that I was taking to a friend's party, birthday party, and you knocked it out of my hand. I'm going to call the cop. And you go, oh, I'm sorry, here. And you hand them money and you go on your way and you don't even realize you've been conned.
Right. Well, today they're updating it to things like, hi, I'm from Microsoft. And, you know, the last time your computer booted up, we noticed that you had a terrible virus. And then this comes from India, by the way, Todd.
Yeah.
And by the time they're done with you, you do have a virus if you follow their instructions.
It's no longer your computer.
That's right.
It's their computer.
They actually own it until you pay up. It's horrible. Absolutely horrible. And people fall for it every day. Hello there. You're on the air with Todd Robbins.
Hey, Todd. How you doing? Have you ever come across anything like this? I've seen like videos on demonic magic where I don't know if you've seen Zendris videos on YouTube where these guys are doing magic that just can't be explained.
Demonic magic?
Yeah.
I'm not exactly clear. I mean, there is a kind of a dark form of magic called bizarre magic, which often affects people on a kind of a different level. It's not about your polite applause so much. It is drop jaw awe and often dread that because they're doing some very, very dark things that are more shocking than really entertaining. If that's what you're talking about, yeah, I do know of folks that do that kind of stuff. But demonic magic, I'm I'm not really familiar with that.
So, caller, what are you talking about?
Well, there's just certain things that they do that just can't be explained. I don't know.
Those
cell phone in that bottle.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, that's a darn good trick. Let's put it that way. And there's some really creative minds in magic, some young guys that are taking things like cell phones and bottles, because everyone has a bottle of water and will do things where it is amazing, because that's their job. But it is, at the end of the day, it's not, they're not affecting anyone's worldview on this. It is for entertainment purposes.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you eat the light bulbs, do you have a meal or a base that binds the glass before you do it?
Yeah, what helps? Yeah. What helps? Yeah. I mean, you mentioned you have a special diet.
You know, that first year out in Coney Island, I put on about 15 pounds because there was a little Italian restaurant around the corner, a family-owned place that would deliver, and I would eat pasta almost every day for lunch. And it's a part of the perils of doing glass eating is that you have a tendency to put on a lot of weight because of all the pasta and things that need to be eaten.
Not the light bulbs.
Yeah.
Light bulbs add no weight to you.
No. Roughage.
How about neon bulbs?
Yeah, you can. You have to be careful with like fluorescent bulbs, like you find in offices and things like that, because the gas inside there is toxic. So it's the same glass as you'll find in incandescent, except that it's filled with that toxic noxious gas. So you have to break it and then kind of let it air out before you bite into it. A couple of times I've done that.
Does that help you, Colin?
Yeah. I had a guy new ate a light bulb once, but it was lit. Did you ever do lit bulbs?
No.
No.
As soon as you bite into it, it's going to go out. But you still have electricity flowing through there, and it can be a little... I like to make it shocking for the audience, not shocking for me.
Okay, I'll tell you a story. I'll tell you a story, Todd, and this is the truth. When I was... pretty young, after I got out of the Air Force, I went to work for a while as an electrician's apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for this older guy, and I swear what I'm about to tell you is true. He was kind of a crusty old guy, and he could take two fingers, lick them, and put them across 110 volts and tell me, okay, that's 110, lick them again, put it on the next one. That's the 220.
Yeah.
He could do that. And I said, you know, this may not be the right career for me. And he said he could do it with 440 as well. And that's just creepy.
Yeah, you know, I've known a couple of electricians, older guys, and there is an old act in the sideshow called the Electric Girl Act. And you sit someone in a chair and you shoot, use a high-frequency generator. It's high voltage but low amp.
Right.
And it causes skin effect, and you can light up neon tubes in the hands, and
right,
sparks jump from the fingertips and stuff like that. And I often would bring someone up from the audience and have... And they would, you know, someone would hold a coin, he'd touch it, and he'd get a big shock. And I got one guy up, and he just held it there, and it was arcing like crazy in his finger. And I turned to him, I said, you're an electrician, aren't you? And he goes, yep.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, this...
You're coming up here, yeah.
Okay. The thing about what this guy could do, though, Todd, is that it wasn't low current.
Yeah, I know.
This is really high current stuff. Now, he's smart enough not to be taking it across his heart, you know.
Yeah.
Right finger, left finger, then you're probably dead because it's going across your heart. But he could do it with two fingers, something I would never even think about, not in a million years.
Yeah, it amazes me. They know enough about how to be grounded and everything so that the shock that guy was getting would probably knock most people back on their butts. But it was...
I know.
I know. He could take it, and he knew from the level of the sensation of how strong that current was.
Yeah, that's right. It turned me away from the whole idea of becoming an electrician. He said, you'll get to where you can do that. It's a lot easier than carrying around a voltmeter. I went... I don't know.
Nope.
I like both
meters.
All right. Ithaca, New York, I think you're on with Todd Robbins. Hi.
Yes. Hi, Art. How you doing?
I'm doing
Todd,
pretty well.
Okay. Go on, Art.
Well, everybody asked me how I'm doing. So, a little arthritis.
Sorry,
the back is sore. You know, anyway, go ahead.
Okay, Todd, I'm curious about something about history that maybe you know. That sometime in the early 60s, there was a gentleman who had a kiosk on the sidewalk, not too far from Nathan's, but near Mermaid Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And he would do magic tricks from there, and people would queue up and watch the tricks in the queue, but then eventually get to participate in one trick when their turn came. And this magician had an assistant who was a little songbird, not a parrot, but a little songbird. I don't know what kind. And this parrot would deliver props from shelves to the magician or people in the audience who were participating in the trick, and then would return the props to the shelf again when the trick was over. And sometimes the bird would pick a card out of a hand of cards to generate a random number used in the trick. And I'm wondering if you knew anything about this man or this bird or what kind of bird it was or the name of them.
I've heard about this performer, and I don't know who it was. I'm sorry to say, but I have heard about this. I also heard that they would also do fortune telling, that you would write a question, the bird would go, and then bring back an answer for, you know, the question that you asked. And there are a number of people who have done trained bird acts like that, and it takes a great deal of patience, but when it's done and done right, I have an old friend who's an English ringmaster named Norman Barrett, who has basically, it's like a dog act, which you'd see in a, except it's with budgies, it's with parakeets. And it's just amazing what he's gotten them to do just by, you know, training them and spending endless hours. So I don't know who that was offhand.
Do you know what kind of bird it was?
It could have been a cockatiel.
So this was not a parrot. This was like a regular songbird.
Oh, okay. Finches are pretty good, pretty smart in regard to you can train them, but I don't. I couldn't say offhand. We actually there is a we did a show as I mentioned, Play Dead, and it's a ghost stories and stuff like that, and we're going to be doing it in Las Vegas, opening up sometime in the next year.
Really?
And they want to expand a little bit, so we're talking with a guy who wants to train a vulture to do basically that same kind of act behind the bar, so that, you know, when a guy needs, you know, some sort of thing, the vulture will jump down and bring him along the bar whatever he needs, and then will jump back to its perch. So we'll see if that ends up being a reality or not.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
If it's again, it's a trick, though, right?
It's just, you know, animal behavior.
Just animal behavior.
Yeah, just, you know, spending countless hours of, you know, you have to take, you find what the animal does and does well and what the animal likes to do, and then mold that into some sort of a trick so it can be done on cue.
Interesting. And then I guess if you lose your animal, you lose your act, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but the good thing about it is if, as an animal is getting older, you usually bring in a younger animal, and that animal will watch the other animal work.
And emulate it?
And emulate it, yeah, yeah.
Interesting. So where are you going to be? You said you're going to be in Las Vegas when?
Well, it hasn't been set up. It'll probably be sometime, in the summer, early fall, we'll be opening, and it's, again, the show is called Play Dead, and it's a lot of fun. If people go to my Facebook entertainer page, so Todd Robbins page there, I always post stuff, or my website, which is toddrobbins.com, or follow me on Twitter, which is at Todd Robbins, they can find out more information about what I'm doing and where I'm doing it.
Okay. I can try and answer a Skype call here, but their microphone is on mute. So, Skype caller, if you want to say something, you're going to have to unmute your microphone. Go right down to the lower right-hand side of your taskbar, and there'll be a little speaker-like looking thing there, and you can unmute it and talk. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to take your call. Giving you 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Forget it. Not going to work. So, Todd, you're going to be in Vegas. You're doing television. You're still doing nightmares on Investigation Discovery. I want to ask about this. How do you like television? Doing TV, is it fun to do? Because I did TV, and I must say, I didn't much like it. It was, everything was hurry up and get it done, that sort of thing. And
yeah, you know, there's never enough time and enough money to do everything exactly the way it should be in television. But if you know what you're doing and you have a pretty good image and vision, you can get, you know, it's sort of, if you can't love the one you want, you love the one you're with.
All right, somebody else on Skype. Hello.
Hey, it's Michael from New Jersey. How are you doing tonight?
Doing fine, Michael. What's up?
I had a couple of questions for your guest.
Yes.
One is, has he ever said Macbeth inside a theater?
Oh, I've said Macbeth. I've whistled. I've said good luck to people.
Yeah.
Just because that's the kind of guy I am.
Okay. And my other question was, did you see the Jack Cassidy episode on Columbo where he played the great Santini?
Yes, yes. That's a wonderful episode. And it was set in a place that was like the Magic Castle. It wasn't the Magic Castle itself, but it was set in a nightclub that was very similar. And that was a great one. And that was a lot of fun. And I believe one of the members of the Magic Castle, one of the early members, was a consultant on that and helped them script that. But I remember him doing that because he was just a wonderful actor, and it was perfect to play the role of this grand and glorious magician and murderer.
Exactly.
All right, caller. Thank you very much. Let's go to somebody who carries the handle of Danny. Hello, Danny.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, good morning, Art.
Good morning.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the magic in his show and how much magic is in there. And I'm sure he's a very physical person, but there must be an element of magic in his show. Nobody could do a show with like that without a certain element of, there must be some magic there, okay?
When you say magic, do you mean magic tricks, or do you mean magic? What are you talking about?
No, I mean there's a certain element that all humans understand. There's a certain element of things we don't understand and things we can learn, and that's exactly what I mean.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, it depends. I try not to mix because I want people to appreciate when I'm doing the sideshow stuff that it is all real. It's all based on true ability. So I stick my hand in an animal trap. I swallow swords. I eat fire. I eat glass. hammer a nail into my nose. Walk over broken bottles in my bare feet. And there's no trickery. There's no deception in any of it.
All right. Last thing. This very quickly. I want to get it in because I did ask about it. That is eating fire. How do you do that?
You put it in your mouth, and you close the mouth and cut off the air.
And, yeah, but then it goes out, right?
Yeah, then it goes out. You deprive it of oxygen, and that's how you extinguish a torch. Don't do it, because if you breathe in, you cauterize your lungs, and you die. And that would be a bad thing. I don't encourage anyone to give it a try, but that's the basic principle.
Yeah, but I've seen fire eaters eat fire and then pull it back out, and it's still on fire.
Yeah, there's a lot of finesse that you can do in terms of retaining the flame in the mouth, spitting fire, there's all sorts of things. But the basic extinguishing a flame in your mouth is about closing the mouth, cutting off the oxygen, and the fire goes out.
All right.
And there's
all
enough moisture in your mouth to keep the mouth from being barbecued for a few seconds.
Todd Robbins, thank you for being here. We'll do it again sometime. Incredible, incredible stuff. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you. Thank you, Art.
Good night. Well, that's certainly a first for me.
Midnight in the desert.
All those 45 time zones out there, I'm Art Bell. Good night.